from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the first day of August, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA needs money to update computer systems, and the WTO Director General says the collapse of the Doha Round means emerging nations want an end to colonial trade practices favoring the developed world. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then we'll round out the week with our final installment in a series called The History of Corn. Today, how hybrids were developed. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL. It's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing and Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on a Friday afternoon like this, September contract for the soft red winter wheat at $7.94, up 10 and a quarter today. December, $8.19, up 10 and a quarter. And the March wheat futures, 8.41 and three quarters, finished a dime higher. September corn futures, $5.65, down 22 and a half. December, $5.85, down 22 and a half. And the March at $6.05, down 22 and one half. And the May futures, $6.18, down 22 cents even. August soybean futures, $13.57 and three quarters, 38 cents lower. September, $13.55 and a half, down 38 and three quarters. And November soybeans down 39 cents, $13.65 the settlement price. January futures, $13.83, down 39. August bean meal futures at $3.73.90, down $5.70 for the day. August bean oil at $56.61, down $1.65. Live cattle futures, August contract, $100.02.5, $1.62.5 higher. October futures at $107.80, down or rather up $1.50. And the August feeder cattle, $115.62.5, $1.82.5 higher. September at $117.70, up $2.37.5. August lean hog futures, $81.57.5, 100 weight, $1.95 higher. And the October futures there at $74.62.5, finished the day 27.5 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures are now trading the nearby September contract at $125 even, 92 cents higher, but the October futures are down $2.69 a barrel at $124.51. August ethanol futures, $2.39.7 lower. September futures at $2.38.3, down 6 and 3-tenths of a cent. Natural gas trading at $9.38.1, 26 and 2-tenths higher. October at $9.49.4, up 27 even. The RBOB gasoline at $3.08.2, that's up 1 1/10, and the October at $2.99.6, up 1 2/10. September heating oil futures, diesel fuel, $3.43.7, down 2 2/10. October at $3.47 even, that's down 2 2/10 as well. September propane is down 3 cents at this hour, $1.75.5 is the trade. The October at $1.76 is up 3 cents for the day. Gold futures are trading the August contract at $909, that is. They're down $4.90 on the hour. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,337 is just about 41 points lower. The U.S. dollar at 73.38 is up 0.18. The CRB index now stands at 416.54. That's up 0.14 for the afternoon. Here's the forecast from our own Ed Kieser for tonight. He says in the northern and central sections of the two-state region, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms during the evening hours, and it'll become partly cloudy overnight. In the south, partly cloudy, a few scattered showers and thunderstorms. Lows this evening will range from 60 in northwestern Illinois to 72 in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says, mostly sunny skies. Highs will range from 82 in far northern Indiana to 94 in the far southern parts of the state of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. On the line with us for a Friday afternoon, as he is each and every Friday, Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
On Fridays, I kind of like sometimes to take a look at the numbers to see how they compare on the week to the last day of trade, and we'll do that this afternoon. Because in the corn pit, there was some thought that we might actually finish the week a bit on the higher side, but today's trade didn't allow that to happen. So the nearby December contract, or the new crop December, in the corn pit finished today down 22.5 cents at $5.85, and that made the weekly trade an 11.5 cent loss to $5.85. What did you make of the market for the day and the week?
Yeah, that wasn't so good, and probably what's even worse is December composite futures on a daily basis. We did close at 585, and on a closing basis alone, Todd, that's the lowest we've been since March 31st. You know, we've been below that during the day trade. For instance, the 23rd or 24th of July, we got down to, 562.75, but we were able to springboard back up. So this is a lower close. This 585 close is technically a lower close and puts us back all the way to the March lows and March closes. So that didn't look good. Obviously, the fund-led selling was what really hit the market today. Several things, hot, wet weather. The heat is there, but there's also, in terms of the most updated models, another midweek rain. Those came back into the new models, that midweek rain for the central part of the country. So that didn't slow down any of the fund-led sales, and it looked like to us overall that the technical side of the market, both Dease Corn and Nove Beans, tried to push above their 10-day moving average this morning on a big wheat buying spree by funds, an estimated 2,000 contracts bought in the first half hour or so by funds on first-of-the-month buying and short covering, but those 10-day moving averages couldn't get held by the buyers and everyone turned seller then at the rest of the day, and it just kept leaking from then on out, especially with that new noontime weather map coming out.
There may be a teaching moment here that we ought to talk about on the technical side just a bit, because you talked about a lower close or the lowest close in recent times, and there will be some that say, but Mike, there was a lower close certainly when we spiked all the way down to 562.75 not very long ago, but on that day the close was not below 585. It was actually at, 590 or something along those lines.
Exactly right, 590.5. So we really broke below this consolidation level that we had been able to carve out since that big thrust down when we kind of scared out all the shorts and all the longs seemed to be done. That may not mean anything, but I don't tend to like it when that kind of stuff happens, because those closing basis trades at the end of the week tend to garner a lot of attention. So what that means is, because wheat had such a nice week this week in the final 2 days, demand was back underneath it. That's healthy. We need the beans on the side of the corn now, especially going into this August 12th report, and especially given that the weather is turning a little bit hotter. So we'd like to see a little bit of heat come in and a little bit of dryness if you were a bull in the market or a person that didn't want to see corn erode, because we continue to feel like the corn has that lack of leadership quality to it, that the trade continues to feel like the yield's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's really up to the beans and the wheat to carry the torch right now until we get to that August 12th report.
Yeah, the August 12th report will be a big one. Any guesses from you on size of acreage and what USDA might put out for national yields?
Yeah, we started compiling that last night, as a matter of fact, and went back and did some crop conditions and crop progress kind of analogies to the last 8 years. And it's funny, Todd, both in terms of crop progress and in terms of dough and setting pods and good to excellent conditions, we are almost right on the money with 2003 right now. And I put out a note to that to the clients last night, and I had a good call come in from one of the clients in South Dakota, and he said, well, the only thing I'd throw at you is that in 2003 we did have yields hit by a dry August, and we also didn't have genetics as good back in 03 as we do right now. I think those are two very, very valid points. But to answer your question, I think we're going to come in around 150 on corn yield, and we're not going to make any changes on bean yield because of how slow the progress is on setting pods, so we're going to keep that at 41.6. As for acres, we're going to come in real close on harvested acres with the corn of 75 million. So I know we're probably going to be on the very low end, if not the lowest, in terms of the newswire estimates. Bean harvested acres, we're going to come in a little over 71, right around 71.2 or so.
Total yield then is what, 11.7? Are you still at 11.7 then?
The production number would be right around 11.25 on the corn and 2.96 on beans. So we're way down there. And I you know, it kind of goes back to one of the guys asking El Paso when we had the meeting. He goes, one of you guys up on that panel, I knew he meant me. He said, one of you guys is awful low and thinking that this was like 93. Are you going to stick with that? And it's like, if you really believe in something, you got to stick with it.
So we are
going to stick with it.
Yeah, I didn't ask you about that one the last time we came out with. I was being nice, I guess. after the last one come out, I won't be so nice this time around.
I don't want you to either.
All right, so we know where you are, and we'll see August 12th, but I won't go any further than that. So, but I guess now one last item with you before I let you go. Even if we're up at that 12.4, which would be on the high end of a range that actually hasn't even been put out at this point, even if we have somebody up on that high end, if we had a harvest that size, we'd still have a crop carryover that would be in the range of what we're doing this year. Could you expect prices to hold in the $6 to $8 range?
No, I don't think so. I think the producers have to realize, as we have, is that the demand, the earth underneath the demand, has been shaken here with the slowdown in China and with the funds leaving and exiting. They're exiting on a fear that demand is getting hit because the U.S. is not decoupled from emerging Asia, that the U.S. slowdown and the European slowdown is going to hit the grain demand in 09 and 010. And so I think you really have to have a good supply number on this August 12th report. And what we're going to talk about at the seminars coming up here in the middle of the month is we need this August report to put a bottom in the market until we see what the combines show on the yield monitors. Otherwise, it may not be pretty going into harvest.
All right. We thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Todd. Have a nice weekend.
Hey, you too. Thanks much. That's Mike Zuzla with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Your Director of Ag Programming at WILL is here now with a look at today's agricultural newscast. His name is Dave Dickey.
In agricultural news, lawmakers are leaving today for their summer recess without consideration of a new supplemental appropriations bill, which contains $172 million for upgrade of USDA's computer systems. USDA officials say the dollars are necessary to meet new requirements of the 2008 Farm Bill. Congress does not reconvene until September. World Trade Organization Director General Pascal Lamy says this week's collapse of the Doha Round shows that emerging nations want an end to, quote, colonial practices favoring the developed world. Lamy made no prediction to if or when WTO nations might go back to the negotiating table. But Lamy adds what's already on the table and agreed on is, quote, still worth fighting for. A labor dispute at the largest fertilizer company in the world could push potash prices even higher. At three mines, accounting for 30% of the total Potash Corporation of Saskatchewan production, workers are poised to go on strike. Their union wants a bigger share of the company's record profits. Food and Drug Administration officials say Congress may need to authorize a better U.S. produce tracking system. Regulators have struggled to pinpoint the worst foodborne outbreak of salmonella in a decade, which has sickened more than 1,300 people in the U.S. and Canada. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency says Canada's 12th case of mad cow disease is most likely linked to contaminated feed containing prohibited material. The case was discovered this past February, a 6-year-old dairy cow from Alberta. The U.S. exported almost 14,000 metric tons of beef last week, the largest weekly total since November of 2003, 1 month before the U.S. discovered its first case of mad cow disease. A cheap U.S. dollar, high feed costs, and robust overseas economies are attracting new buyers as well as old ones. And scouts on the annual Wheat Quality Council tour put the 2008 hard spring wheat yield at 37.7 bushels to the acre. That's up from the 2007 average of 37.3. Tour participants surveyed 422 fields across the Northern Plains. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. There you'll be able to hear Commodity Week after about 6 o'clock on a Friday evening Central Time. That's tonight. Our guest this week is Purdue University agricultural economist Chris Hurt. Commodity Week up on our website at willag.org after 6 this evening. Now up next, corn, as we know it today, is a relatively young crop in comparison to the age of the world. All this week, we've been reporting on the history of corn with retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer. Troyer spent 7 years researching and writing about his favorite crop. Our final installment will explore how hybrid corn was developed. In the 1920s, U.S. corn farmers were still planting open-pollinated corn. About 1,000 genetically different varieties existed, and most of them were white-dent corn. A few were high-yielding yellow-dent varieties. They were popular throughout the Corn Belt and became even more so when swine feeding trial studies proved hogs did better eating yellow corn because it contained vitamin A. A Reed Yellow Dent was the most popular open-pollinated corn variety in states like Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa. But the farther north you went, the less tolerant it was of the shorter, drier growing season. Well, the University of Minnesota went to work on the problem and solved it with a yellow dent corn called Minnesota 13. These two varieties, says Forrest Troyer, set the stage for the development of hybrid corn. By 1920, the double cross hybrid method had been developed by Donald Jones. Still, it remained difficult to find four inbreds good enough to make a double cross to sell. Henry Wallace, who founded the Pioneer Seed Company in Iowa, sold the first double cross hybrid in 1924. It was called Copper Cross. It wasn't until 10 years later, in 1934, that hybrid corn varieties even made a dent in U.S. corn production. Forrest Troyer says that year, 0.3% of all corn sold for seed in the U.S. was a hybrid.
And Iowa was the fastest growing, partly because of the work that the editorials that Henry Wallace wrote for Wallace's Farmer. And by World War II, by 1941, 1942, I believe 90% of the corn in Iowa was hybrid, and the rest of the Corn Belt wasn't far behind. Just a few more years, you know, that they it was an amazing thing once it got going. It was quickly accepted.
In 1934, that 0.3% of hybrid seed sold in the U.S. came primarily from two companies, Pioneer and the Funk Brothers Seed Company of Bloomington, Illinois. In 1935, Troyer says the first Ag Experiment Station hybrid was introduced, U.S. 13. A year later, Iowa 939 was released. In those early years of hybridization of corn, it was thought farmers would buy the original material and then produce their own hybrids. That's how open-pollinated crosses had been adapted throughout the Midwest, but the model didn't work for hybrid corn. So the corn seed companies prospered. Pioneer and Funk, along with DeKalb, were the three largest. These three companies and the experiment stations used the available open-cross yellow-dent corn to develop their hybrids. It was at this point that the majority of the genetic diversification of the domesticated corn plant was lost. Today's hybrid corn comes from about 8 genetically different open-pollinated yellow dent corn lines. They include Lemming, Lancaster, Reed Yellow Dent, Minnesota 13, Northwestern Dent, Funk's Yellow Dent, and Troyer's Reed, along with 176A.
But over time, the thing that happened is that those inbreds that came from those popular varieties became the backbone of the hybrid seed corn industry. And what it really amounted to, as more emphasis was put on white adaptation of the hybrids, the inbreds from the varieties that did well over a more widely adapted area came to the forefront, and they're the backbone of the hybrid seed corn industry today.
Today, Forest Troyer says half of the seed corn sold can trace its heritage to Reed Yellow Dent. Another 20% is directly related to Lemming, Lancaster, Minnesota 13, and Northwestern Dent. It's a narrow genetic base from which to work. He says it confines the ability of corn breeders to continue improving yellow dent corn. And in a world which is expected to grow by 4 billion people in the next 30 years, that could be a problem. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Time now to take a look at the agricultural cash markets. And on the line with us on a Friday afternoon is Bruce Bostard. He's the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
So you tell me you're a little shell-shocked for the day. Why is that the case?
Actually, we've had several things hit us today. We've got the board selling off pretty dramatically and feeding on itself as it goes. So that's been kind of a change of pace over what we were used to seeing earlier. This is the effective date, the first date of our merger with Danforth Gilman Grain. So we have three new elevators that have come into the system and trying to make sure that the electronics work and the computers are talking to each other and all the accounting numbers are in the right pew is always an interesting situation.
I'm glad I didn't say 70 Central Illinois. And if you're in Danforth, I guess you're moving across into Central Illinois, too, now with 10, right?
10, yes. Yep.
10 total. So how much grain will you have under capacity?
Oh, that'll be another probably 4 million bushels of volume.
Tell me, back to the cash grain and the basis levels at this point. What do you see for basis over the next week?
Basis levels have been backing off. You'd think with the board selling off like it has, that we would see a little bit more support. But nearby soybeans have sold off. It looks like Argentina has, with them reentering the export market, that's taken some of the pressure there. The processors seem like they're getting their situation in order for the next month or so. So they're getting comfortable and the basis levels have backed off some.
It looks a bit like July and August as a normal sort of season setting up for harvest.
Yes, it does.
Okay, and your bids?
We are at 525 on nearby corn, 535 new crop in Paxton, beans at 1353 and 1275.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company's 10 East Central and Central Illinois Elevators, joins us on Friday afternoons to take a look at the cash grain market in 2 minutes. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. This is the Closing Market Report.
It's National Raspberry Cream Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first U.S. census was taken. We had a total of 3,939,214 mouths to feed. In 1793, France introduced the first metric weight, the kilogram. In 1817, Sir Joseph Henry Gilbert was born. Gilbert and his partner, Sir John Laws, conducted agricultural experiments at Rothamsted Experimental Station, the oldest agricultural research station in the world. They are considered founding fathers of the agricultural sciences and are also co-inventors of superphosphate fertilizer. In 1870, Ilya Ivanov was born. Ivanov, a Soviet biologist, developed the practical procedure for artificial insemination of domesticated animals. Initially used on horses, by the 1930s, the procedure was used on other farm animals. And in 1893, Henry D. Perkey and William Ford patented shredded wheat. Whole wheat is boiled, dried, pressed into thin shreds, and finally baked. They presented the product at the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago, Illinois, in 1893. When their patent expired in the mid-1930s, the name, shredded wheat, became generic. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg joins us on a Friday afternoon. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And let's hear about the weather forecast for the weekend first.
Well, it looks like we'll start out not too bad, sort of typical summer weather around here with pretty warm and humid. But by Sunday, we start getting into some heat, and it looks like we're going to stay pretty hot through the middle part of next week until we get a cold front coming through here, bring us some more rain and some relief from the temperatures, which are likely to be in the low to mid-90s across a good part of Illinois by Monday and Tuesday. So that combined with some dew points in the 70s should make for some rather uncomfortable weather here in the Midwest.
Nuisance heat, but not deadly. Out west, will they get hotter?
West is going to stay pretty warm, it looks like. Does look like much in the way of relief is going to come there, although they could see this front push into the central plains, into Nebraska, and maybe even into northern Oklahoma by late next week. But in the southern part of the plains will stay pretty hot. Northern and central plains ought to get some relief, a little bit of relief at least, from this cold front about midweek next week. We get a little bit of a break.
Let's walk back eastward to the Corn Belt. Talk about the evening lows. Will they be much in line with the 90-degree heat and a bit warmer than usual, or will we drop down?
We probably will stay up there. With the dew points up in the 70s, it's going to be hard to get low temperatures much lower than the dew point overnight. And so we're going to see probably warmer than normal lows over the next, until this cold front goes through about Wednesday or Thursday. So for the next 4 to 5 days, we'll see low temperatures, generally probably 70 and above over much of the region with the dew points as high as they are. Right now we're looking at dew points that are really in the mid-70s already across much of Illinois. Up in Rockford, it's 69, but you get downstate a little bit, Decatur, 75, Springfield, 75. So it's very muggy out there, and that will keep temperatures up overnight.
Rainfall coming along with the cold front as it comes across.
There will be
Wednesday.
Some, yes. Looks like showers and thunderstorms will break out ahead of that front, maybe as early as Tuesday night, and then could see some heavier rain across the northern part of the state early Wednesday as this front starts to drop south, and then scattered showers and thunderstorms developing ahead of the front as it pushes through Illinois and Indiana.
And does it mean cooler and slightly drier weather afterwards?
Yeah, I think the last part of next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, ought to be fairly decent weather. We'll see temperatures much closer to seasonal normals, and humidity, dew points should be down probably in the low 60s, and it'll be a lot more comfortable.
Do you have a handle on growing degree days at this point? I didn't ask
yeah, we are... We are running generally behind normal on growing degree days. Through the end of, through end of July, growing degree days were all running about 100 to 150 behind normal across much of Illinois. But we should make up some ground on that the next few days as these temperatures warm up and we keep overnight temperatures up. And, you know, with daytime temperatures in the mid-90s, that's not ideal, but it will help add to the totals.
Thanks much, Steve.
Okay, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. Speaking of growing degree days, has a big impact on crop maturity. And agronomist Emerson Nafziger at the University of Illinois writes a bit about that and whether the first frost might catch some of that corn that was planted in June. You can see it at the bulletin, ipm.uiuc.edu. I'm Todd Gleason.